and the 3-2 pitch on the way. Strike three called, and the Cubs win the ball game. Pomeranz, a fastball right down the middle. Derek Hill caught looking. And that's the way the ball game ends, with the Cubs winning it by a score of 5-2.
That from the 12th of May, when Drew Pomeranz got a save. Oh, digging. Is this Los Lobos? Oh, making me smile, Tyler. Is this Baby T on the Wheels of Steel? Is this from, like, my list of music or yours? What is it from? What is this?
I'm on the official Hit and Run Music hockey page.
Oh, my God. Tell Sean Sears to come and hang out on this page.
I know. Credit to Sean. Thank you, Sean.
No, but this is making me happy. Drew Pomeranz has had a fascinating career, and we should be getting a call from him sometime in the next few minutes. He came up as a prospect with Cleveland and was traded for Yibaldo Jimenez to the Colorado Rockies, and then was with Colorado. And then he's been in so many big trades as Drew Pomeranz. My God. I don't think I'll ask him. Probably not a great set of memories to think about all those times you were dealt. But yeah, that big Yibaldo Jimenez trade, and then in a Brett Anderson trade. Brett Anderson, briefly a Cub as well, to Oakland. And then in a Yonder Alonso trade to the Padres, and then to the Red Sox for Anderson Espinoza, and a member of the Red Sox for a while, including the 2018 World Series team. So has started games in the postseason for the Red Sox, and has pitched in Fenway, and now, of course, gets to pitch in Wrigley. But one of the great stories of this Cubs season has been this kind of sort of rediscovery of Drew Pomeranz after having exercised the upward mobility clause in his contract with Seattle. Thought maybe he could find a way to the bigs with another team, and he did so, and now here he is, and doing awfully well as part of this Cubs bullpen. And the Cubs bullpen has been terrific, and it's been used aggressively and in different ways. I mean, you look at Drew Pomeranz's numbers in the 30 games that he has pitched in for the Cubs. The ERA is under one with a 0.69. It was a perfect zero for a good long while there. The WHIP, walks plus hits per innings pitch, is also under one at 0.96, which is quite something to have both of those numbers down there. In the 26 innings that he has worked, 26 strikeouts, so averaging a strikeout per inning so far at this point in his Cubs career. So we'll talk to Drew in just a couple minutes here on 670 The Score. Looking at that Cubs bullpen and thinking about how all the pieces are fitting together, it really is about Palencia on that back end at this point. It's remarkable just how comfortable he is and how confident he is and what that has now meant. It's because you've got the Cubs as a bullpen ERA number 6 out of 30 in MLB at 3.48. And in terms of the walks plus hits per innings pitched, you've got them 8th in MLB in that way. They're just not giving up that many base runners. They're not giving up a ton of hits either. 13th in batting average against out of 30 in MLB. And what's interesting is that strikeouts way down there, 29th out of 30 in strikeouts. So it's not a big-time swing-and-miss bullpen. It's just not. If you want to look at the rate stats to get a better gauge, all the way down there, 29th out of 30 in terms of strikeouts per 9 innings. I like to look at K-to-walk ratio. and see where that can stand. And in K to walk ratio, you've got the Cubs middle of the pack, about 19th. So it's not a classic bat missing bullpen, that is for sure. But it is a bullpen that has been very, very effective and continues to be so. As the Cubs sit here, surprisingly, with the best record in all of baseball, as the Detroit Tigers have lost 6 games in a row to this point. Crazy times going on in MLB. Some incredible moments. The Mariners with this really bizarre RBI off the knob of the bat when they tied the game against the Astros last night and then walked them off in 11. And it's just, you've got a lot of teams that are in it, that are desperate to remain relevant, that are smelling the possibilities of the postseason and working hard to get it done and stay in the midst in these couple of weeks here. In these couple of weeks that maybe they should not affect what a team's plans are at the deadline as much as they do, but they do. I mean, if you are the Red Sox and you come in to the All-Star break having won 10 in a row and you're like surprisingly relevant and thinking that you are now a buyer, and then you come out and if you were to get swept here by the Cubs, do you rethink things that quickly with that small of a sample size? On some level, it's crazy to think of such a small sample making a big deal, but this is where we are. This is where you are, especially when you have guys in the front office who don't dream, frankly, of committing one way or the other. Some guys are brave and bold and unafraid, and some guys like to consider themselves needle threaders, just hanging there right in the middle with an opportunity to either ramp it up and add or reload some prospects by dealing some of their players away that maybe they can play it right down the middle and go in either direction. It seems like a lot of GMs love to live in that space. With the deadline coming up, had an opportunity to talk to Kenny Rosenthal a little bit yesterday in the clubhouse, and we were talking about the different folks who might be available and how much is out there. And Kenny Rosenthal talked about the trade deadline market during the Fox broadcast yesterday. And it fits some of the stuff that we had talked about in the clubhouse that I can fill you in on here. But here's Ken Rosenthal on Fox saying how the market is looking right now at the deadline.
Popular sentiment is that because the Cubs might lose Tucker, they have to go all in at the deadline. And that's a reasonable enough theory, except there's one problem. There aren't that many good players who are going to be available. Eugenio Suarez, 2 home runs tonight for the Diamondbacks. He's up to 33 for the season. Well, the Cubs aren't the only team that is going to want him. The Yankees are going to be in there, maybe the Mariners as well. And then we can look at starting pitching. And certainly the Cubs would love to add a rotation, top of the rotation type. Problem is, Sandy Alcantara's ERA is in the 7s. Zach Gallen's is in the 5s. A guy like Mitch Keller in Pittsburgh, he's attractive, but you're going to have to give up top prospects, take on the rest of his contract, $55 million over the next 3 years. It's just not going to be easy. Now, in a perfect world for the Cubs, they'd kill 2 birds with 1 stone. Maybe get Gallen and Suarez, or from the Rockies, Ryan McMahon and Germán Márquez. But again, the demand is high. It's a seller's market.
A seller's market. So there you go. A seller's market for all those teams out there. And Kenny's right, and we were talking about it. It's not that Alcantara, everybody's kind of trying to figure out what Alcantara is. He was the best pitcher in baseball as recently as about 18 months ago. Then he blew out the arm with Tommy John. He's worked his way back. The velocity is there, but the results are not. So is it command that's not quite there? Is it the movement on the pitches that's not quite there? As Drew Pomerantz is going to call here in just a minute or two from the Cubs, and we will talk with him. You'll also hear from Owen Casey coming up in a little bit, who was on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday. And I should mention, you're listening to 670 The Score, WSCR Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, an Odyssey sports station. But, you know, Alcantara is not all the way back. So what's last to come back? Is it command? Maybe. But can you bank on that to come back? I've been thinking that the Cubs could, and he's been the target in my mind. He's been the guy that I wanted to have them target. But it does not appear like maybe he's going to be worth what the Marlins have been dreaming of getting. So big time delay in getting anything like that to happen. And so meanwhile, you wait. And all these teams are out there waiting. It is 670 The Score. It's Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel. And joining us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline is Drew Pomerantz of the Chicago Cubs. Download the Circa app today. Drew, good morning. About to be good afternoon. How are you today?
Doing pretty good. How you doing today?
I am good, man. Thanks so much for talking. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, of course.
So I know you just threw. What is the throw plan? What do you work on when you're about an hour away from game time, as you are right now?
We just play catch outside, and just get the arm moving and just get loose. I mean, there's some guys who don't even, not on our team, but some guys around that won't even throw on day games. They just pick up the ball and when the phone rings. But I can't do that. I got to get a little stretched out before I get ready and prime for the game.
So this is part of bullpen life for Drew Pomerantz, which is come and gone at different times in your career. How comfortable is it now in terms of your routine as a bullpen guy?
It's pretty comfortable. I mean, at this point, I think the last thing on my baseball pitching bingo card was probably opening games, and I've done that a few times this year, so I'm pretty comfortable in any situation at this point.
A couple minutes ago, we played you getting the save on the 12th of May against the Marlins. So yeah, you've got all of that, but now the opener, the last thing on the bingo card. I mean, that pretty much is it, right? What's the deepest you ever went in a game as a starter in your long starting career?
Yeah, it's probably that's probably the other one. Is a complete game, I guess, would be the only one left. But I've been pitched into the eighth a couple times, I think. And I was more of a high pitch count guy, so I didn't get in, wasn't getting too deep into the games back then. But into the eighth a few times for sure.
30 starts in 2016 with the split between the Padres and the Red Sox, and then 32 for the Red Sox in 2017. It's interesting. I was looking at your Baseball Savant page, and the my God, you threw a lot of curveballs as a starter. I think you were number one in curveball percentage multiple years there in the starting years, up in the high 30s, and now I think it's down at like 22%. Has that been a big part of the mindset shift from starter to bullpen to go away from that profile a little bit?
I don't know. I mean, I still, my curveball has always been a really good pitch for me. You just kind of got to, you kind of just use what you got. I mean, my fastball has more cut on it now, even though I'm throwing a lot of fastballs. A lot of them aren't really straight, they're cutting. I don't know if it's from all the surgeries or what it is, maybe just throwing styles. But, I feel really confident in that pitch. I just haven't had to throw it as much, I kind of use it as needed. And I, as a starter back then, I think I was throwing a lot of curveballs, and it was a good pitch for me, and I had good success with it. That was kind of the, right around the time, I think me and like Rich Hill, I was throwing a bunch. I think like McCullers was throwing a high percentage of them. There's a few of us who were throwing a really high percentage of curveballs as starters, and but you got to adapt over time. And like I said, I've still you know, just kind of use whatever's needed in the situation.
Yeah, I remember Tom Verducci in Sports Illustrated wrote a big like cover piece about the return of the curveball, and that's what it was. It was McCullers from the right side, and you. It's like, but everybody around this league knows about your curve. You think it sits in people's minds and makes the fastball better sometimes?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that I still, although I'm not throwing it as much, it's still really good pitch. And I haven't really given up much on that pitch still. So, you know, I like to think it's in the back of their minds. I hope it is, even though I'm throwing probably 85% fastballs right now. But again, like I said, they're also, I don't know if they're, you know, it's moving. The ball's either, you know, I get really good vertical movement on my fastball, and also this newfound cut that I get too. So it's not exactly the straight fastball that I had back in the day when I was throwing all those curveballs.
So, all right. It might just be the surgeries. Like, it's not a concerted effort to get more cut on the fastball. Did it just start happening?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'm on the side of the ball more when I started throwing more arm side fastballs, or it's just a combination of everything. But it definitely has some late cutting action, which helps me get swing and miss. And, you know, even though I'll throw them right down the middle, sometimes it kind of jumps up the barrel at the last second. They don't, they get jammed or hit it off the end, which has helped me a lot this year.
That's awesome. It felt like as soon as you got here, Drew, like right away, you were in the circle of trust, or at least Craig Counsell wasn't afraid to try you right away. And were there conversations about that, or did you feel his confidence in you from the get-go? Because it seemed to happen a lot faster than other times I've seen veterans come here, to be honest.
Yeah. You know, the first few, you know, I kind of got out there, and then it's kind of that, you know, new toy, let's see what you got. And, you know, I threw well, and I was, I think, throwing well and getting good results and throwing strikes is a big part of getting more opportunities. And, you know, I've played for Craig before, obviously, in Milwaukee, and, you know, I don't know if he, you know, he trusted me to in these situations and some of those tight spots early on. And, you know, when you keep having success, you know, it's like you keep running, you know, just keep running you out there, you know.
Yeah. What does he do well as a manager, you think?
He's great. I mean, it's like a player. It's like having another player who's calling shots. And I think that, you know, I say this a lot, that, you know, with all the analytics and, you know, the use of analytics and using of your just baseball knowledge is what your eyes see is. And, you know, they're trying for us, and we've had a lot of success in the bullpen and the pitching in general. And I think that they use these analytics to try and find these pockets that are going to be the best opportunity for success as us as pitchers, and for, you know, which in turn is good for the team. So I think they're really good at, you know, they're really targeted of which situation, you know, if you're on some teams, other teams, they might just be like, oh, you know, they just run out whoever in whatever situation, no matter who's up. But here they're really, you know, taking a look at who's up to bat, who might pitch hit, and how each of us fares against that grouping of hitters. And I think they do a really good job of that.
This is a really cool weekend, Drew, in town to have the Red Sox here. I know you only threw six pitches on Friday. You got out there, got one out on six pitches. But, like, did you have a moment of being out there being like, man, I've now pitched for both of these teams in both of these uniforms? It's pretty special.
Yeah, I was telling somebody the other day, we call those like to call those revenge games. And I, you know, this being my like 12th organization or whatever it is, we got a lot of revenge games going around these days.
Yeah, you do. What's better, Wrigley or Fenway? You can tell us.
I like them both. I mean, I like the history behind it all. You know, your fans show up every day, and, you know, the basically, you know, sports just mean more in these towns. And, you know where you stand, you know, one way or another, whether you're good or whether you suck, you know, you know what's going on. And I love that. Just in every situation, I love that pressure. And, you know, I love that.
You and Ryan Brazier both on that 2018 Red Sox team. How does this group measure up, you think, in terms of how they play this club?
You know, we have a really good group of guys. Obviously, you know, it's a little, you know, every team's a little different, but the group that we have here is, you know, we go out there and we're battling and we're never out of the game. And, you know, it's very relaxed. No one's really stressing, you know, it's just very, you know, we all hang out together. We all goof around and talk, but at the same time talk baseball and stay locked in. you know, we're just having fun. Playing baseball.
That's awesome. Hey, Drew, I'll close with this. I like to get baseball bona fides from players when I get a chance to talk to them. Who was one of your most favorite players in the game as you were growing up? Who was one of your guys, and tell us why?
Oh, man. Like, favorite people to watch. You know, I don't really remember watching a whole lot of like anyone specific, but I mean, you know, Randy Johnson, obviously being left-handed, is someone you like to root for. And then, I don't know, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and Cardinals were right there. You know, we used to watch a little bit of Cardinals and Mark McGwire and some of those guys on that team, but I really didn't have one in particular, player, I wouldn't say, which most guys do have, you know, one, but I really didn't have one. I would just watched a lot of sports growing up.
Understood. And then did you go to games as a kid or growing up in college or whenever, wondering the best game that you've gotten to just hang out and watch in person?
Baseball or?
I was thinking baseball, but if you got another one that pops out, it's okay.
I love baseball. I mean, I've been to a couple Super Bowl games, but.
Oh, that'll work. Go ahead.
I was sitting at the 20-yard line of the Patriots Seahawks when that whole thing happened right at the end zone there.
Wow.
That was right in front of us.
Wow.
And then the game kind of ended, and that was wild. That's the first sports one that comes to mind for me, but obviously I've been to a lot of sports, a lot of the sports events over the years.
They should have just run beast mode. Like, what are you doing?
I know. That was insane.
Oh my God. And then what's one thing you would change if you were commissioner, Drew Pomerantz? What's one thing you would change in this sport?
Oh man. I don't know. I'm going to go with a random one off the wall, just because I talked to someone about this, and the injury, you know, like a pitcher injury, and then a reliever has to come on and get ready on the mound.
Yeah,
I'm all for letting the guy warm up in the bullpen and then run in instead of having to do it all on the mound.
Interesting. From the fan's perspective. You know, I could see it, but what is it just in terms of, like, is it more nerve wracking to do all your warm ups out there? Just feel stranger to do it out there?
I don't know. I just like the thought of doing it in the bullpen, and you have that, you know, 30 second jog in to just kind of reset before you have to, you know, instead of just going right into it.
Yeah.
And feel like you're rushed on the field where everyone's watching you and doing all that.
Yeah.
So that's my random one.
There you go. Oh, we'll take it. Hey, Drew, thanks for doing this, man. Appreciate it. And nice to talk to you. And congrats on the success, man. It's been really fun to watch.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You got it. It's Drew Pomerantz of the Chicago Cubs joining us right here on 670 The Score. We're going to talk Red Sox with Will Fleming coming up in a little bit. But before that, wanted to let you hear this, and let's listen to it together, because Owen Casey was on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday, and I really want to hear what this kid is like. Do you want to trade this kid? Do you want to keep this kid? How's he processing all of that? Here's a nice healthy chunk of Owen Casey from Inside the Clubhouse yesterday on 670 The Score.
Last year, you had 19 home runs in 127 games. This year, you've got 19 home runs in only 74. How would you explain the biggest difference this year in your production?
Honestly, I'd equate it to really just reps. Like, last year was my first year in AAA, not really knowing what to expect. And, you know, this is my second year in AAA, so I have a better understanding of what the pitchers are trying to do here. And it's just, you know, see more pitches and really being comfortable with my approach, and really just staying true to myself, not trying to do too much, and just hitting nice line drives and let my skills take over.
You've been in the Cub organization now for 5 years. You came over in the Darvish deal, so you were traded as a very young player. What has the ascension been like in the Cub organization? What have you learned about the Chicago Cubs as maybe different from what it was in San Diego when you were first signed and starting to be developed?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I think about when I think about the Chicago Cubs, not only the big league team, but as like a whole organization, is like a big family. and you know, they take really good care of all the players inside of it, you know, whether it be on and off the field. They have somebody for everyone. So I really just think of that as a big family, and they really do a great job of developing guys and making sure like that we get everything we need, like resources, like I said, on and off the field. So it's just pretty cool. Being in San Diego, I wasn't really there for long. I think I was there for maybe 7 months. I didn't even play a minor league game with them. So it was really hard to tell what the organization would be like, but I'm really glad to have been traded to an organization like Chicago Cubs.
So, Owen, the elephant in this radio room and in every media outlet in baseball right now is your name being used as what the other 29 teams would really like to obtain if the Cubs are able to make a good deal for themselves. How does a young man like yourself, who's worked as hard as he has and been in an organization for 5 years, wrap your head around those type of things being bandied about as you continue your trek toward the major leagues?
Honestly, I don't have Twitter. I don't ever check it, and that's really where I feel like most of the stuff is at. So it is what it is, I guess. You know, I'd love to make it up to the Chicago Cubs, and, you know, if that happens, see if I get traded, you know, cool. But I'm happy to, you know, be here right now, and I'm just focusing on going to the park every day and playing ball. I'm not really trying to focus on that. What happens, happens, and, you know, it is what it is, but right now I'm just really focused on being, you know, the best I can be for the Chicago Cubs. I mean, being ready for whenever they need me. So I really just try not to pay attention to it. And the biggest thing is really honestly not having Twitter. You know, you can go on Twitter and you scroll and you just see stuff. So
it's a good,
you
know, good advice. Really try, very good
yeah,
advice.
I really try not to do that. And I know a lot of guys near this time and offseason try to play GM and it just never works out. So I really just try to be me and go to the park every day and have fun.
We're talking with Cubs prospect Owen Casey, the Iowa right fielder here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That's a great approach, Owen, and I think it speaks to a lot of maturity and discipline you have to avoid social media. But you're also 23 and a prospect who's had a lot of success, and you know that you probably feel you're ready for major league pitching to succeed at the major league level. And you know, when you look at the Cubs, boy, they got two all-star outfielders. They got Seiya Suzuki, who's leading the majors and runs batted in. And there are other guys along the way, and Ian Happ is a gold glover. So I think when you look at the Cubs situation, how are you able to compartmentalize and not worry about the guys who may be blocking you from a major league spot on a roster and still succeed at the minor league level in just accepting whatever happens?
Like you just said at the end there, you know, accepting whatever happens, you know, obviously I'd love to be up there, but as of right now, you know, like you said, they have two all-stars, they got Seiya and Ian Happ. I mean, I'm blocked, but you know, I'll be ready for whatever happens, whatever they need me for. I really just try to show up every day and play ball because ultimately that's what I'm to do, you know, and whenever they feel like I'm ready and I can be put in place at a major level, you know, I'll be ready for the call. But right now, all I can really do is just play hard every single day and not worry about what they want to do with me. And, you know, ultimately force them to make a decision. But I think it's just really about being where your feet are, staying humble, not trying to like press and do too much because that's when bad things happen. So really just try to play the game every day. You know, I don't try to do too much and just like not think about it at all because that's where I think you get kind of, you can go down a rabbit hole with that stuff. So I really just try to push to the side, and I feel like I'm doing a pretty good job of that this year. So yeah, that's honestly my plan with that is really just keeping my feet are and play ball.
You know, here in Chicago, Owen, Pete Crow Armstrong has obviously taken the city by storm and now the league as well. And it was just a year ago that he was your teammate down in Iowa at AAA, coming up then after doing what he needed to do at the AAA level. What does his example mean to people in your clubhouse in Iowa? And how good of friends did you guys become in your short period as teammates?
I play with him in high A, double A, and triple A. So me and him, you know, we're pretty close, you know. Pete's a great guy, and he's doing, you know, he's doing Pete things. You know, I always knew he was meant for this. He's probably the most gifted ball player I've ever played with. He definitely is the most gifted ball player I've ever played with, without a doubt, you know, on both sides of the ball. He's so athletic, you know, and he's worked his tail off. So he's earned this and he deserves this. And, he's a great guy. I mean, we're all rooting for him down here, you know, to keep going, keep having a great year. And it just shows you, you know, hard work pays off. And, you know, when you get talent mixed with hard work, you know, great things can happen.
Man, it's interesting. That's Owen Casey talking about Pete Crow Armstrong. Didn't realize they played together at three different spots. And the respect and the relationship is there. Hard not to imagine those guys in the big leagues together for a good long while, right? Whew. That's a tough one about whether to trade that guy or not. Better be a real good pitcher with lots of extra contract time beyond this year. Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run. Will Fleming from the Red Sox radio booth will round out the show when we come back with you up until about 12:45 on 670 The Score.
You corrected me earlier in the day saying you don't need any validation. You guys now have the best record in baseball on July 19th. Would it mean anything at this point other than what you've done?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does show you what we've done. But I know that, you know, we're not going to look back. We're going to look to the next game. And we got a lot of work ahead of us. But it's, you know, it's a credit to what the guy's doing. I don't know if we're at the 100-game mark yet, but pretty darn close. And as much as anything, we think we've been a consistent baseball team, and that bodes well moving forward.
That is Craig Counsell talking about the Cubs, who have the best record in baseball. Let's ask our next guest if the Cubs look like the best team in baseball. Will Fleming joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Will Fleming, the fine radio voice for the Boston Red Sox. We didn't get a chance to catch up in the booth the last couple days, so we have to do it on the air. That's how I roll, Will. Welcome in.
I was ducking you. You think I'm only fine? I mean, what is that? How are you, man? Good afternoon. It is great to be in Chicago, even though the first two have not gone great for the Sox. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. The very fine broadcast voice for the...
Adverbs, please. Let's go.
Let's go. Adverbs. Make the world go round. If I told you the Cubs are the best team in baseball, do you buy it from getting a chance to watch them? You only see them for a couple of games here so far.
They look really, really good. I mean, it's really a hard label to put on anybody, the best team. Like, do I think...
Of course.
Maybe the Padres and the Dodgers and some other teams are more dangerous than they are because of the depth of starting pitching in the lineup. Yeah, but, I mean, even the Phillies that we're going to see after this game here today in Chicago, I think, are right there with the best in the game. But, the Cubs belong in the conversation. And, you know, I always say this, Matt, where you only know what a team is when you see them in person. I think all of us in this sport kind of keep tabs on everybody. You watch the highlights, you look at the standings, and you talk to people. But I think seeing this team up close and personal, especially I think in this ballpark, they are a wagon in this yard. And it's just really fun to watch the fans embrace this team. There, what has hit me, Speaks, the last couple of days is how many parallels there are between these two great organizations. And it starts with the ballpark and the fan base. And I think as the Red Sox got hot, they really fed off the energy of a starved fan base at Fenway Park. And that is happening here in Chicago, too. It's so fun to watch this young, athletic, really dynamic Cubs team have so much fun in front of these great fans, and it is a privilege to be here.
Yeah, it's good stuff, Will. Yeah, I started the show talking about the similarities and the connections between the two organizations writ large, literally through the last, you know, 130 years or so. Sure. And everything like that. But I think what you're talking about is a little more of the moment, where both of these teams, you know, have been spending some money and, you know, have had moments of being pretty good, but are they great? No, not necessarily. But right now, the love affair for the Cubs and their fans is in full bloom. You're seeing it, and it feels similar to the love affair between the Red Sox and their fans?
Yeah, it does. And, like, when we were back at Fenway, as the Red Sox went on this incredible run into the All-Star break, you know, the Red Sox, you have to be fair about this thing. They won four world championships in the last 20 years, and yet they've had all these last-place finishes, and our fan base has a huge expectation level, and they're impatient, and they're a little angrier than the fans here in Chicago, to be perfectly blunt about it. But when it goes well, it is as beautiful a thing as you can have in all of pro sports. And when the Red Sox got hot going into the break, I mean, Fenway was as loud as it's been in 10 years. And there's something about this young group that they got going with, you know, the Roman Anthonys of the world, Zaidan Rafaela, Marcelo Meyer, and obviously Alex Bregman has done everything they could have ever dreamed of. This group, a lot like the Cubs. I mean, that's the thing that's been interesting to me being here, is watching the Nico Horners of the world. And PCA is obviously a star, and people are I can't believe how many Crow Armstrong jerseys are already everywhere at Wrigley. And there's a similar thing happening at Boston, where it's a likable group. It's easy to root for a lot of the players on both these teams. And I think that's where, you know, Jed and Craig Breslow in Boston have a real opportunity, I think, to add to foundational groups that are seem like they've got real staying power. And I expect both organizations and both clubs to be super active at the deadline and make a real push.
So, yeah, there's something different when it's your own guys, when it's your own kids that you're calling up. The love affair of the fans in center field and Pete Crow Armstrong is quite something. From your vantage point, you see that? You see him turning to the crowd before the game begins and doffing the cap and them going nuts? Like, they've got a thing out there, man.
They do, and it's awesome, and I love that, right? I mean, wholesome might not be the right word, but it's just freaking fun. And watching him come into his own is a really neat thing. Because, you know, we go to the Yankees all the time, and they're stupid bleacher bums are yelling out all the names of them. And that, to me, is a little bit of a tire hack. But this feels so much more kind of organic and pure and individualized, which I love. I mean, and listen, I know Cub fans think of it in the same way they did when Sosa would sprint out onto the field and run and salute everybody. It's not to that level yet, but I think it's really cool that PCA is embracing that thing and the fans share that love back with him. You come here all the time. We come every other year. I now, Matt, have this obsession. Like, I really do. I want a World Series between the Red Sox and the Cubs. Like, I just think it'd be the coolest thing that could possibly happen for the game that we love so much. These fan bases, these ballparks, these teams, I just think it would be amazing. And I do think in the next few years, that's real possible.
They were both five outs away in 03, man. You know? It's it almost happened, and I'll never forget. I forget who wrote the piece, but after the shutdown in '94 and the season ceased to exist, Sports Illustrated wrote an article mythologizing the rest of the year, and the Cubs and Red Sox made a mad dash for the World Series in that article. I'll never forget it because yes, it does need to happen. Will Fleming, is there a chance that the Devers trade gets looked back on like the Omar trade, where a team got better after dealing the disgruntled superstar?
Yeah, a little addition by subtraction, I think, is part of it. I have been asked ad nauseum about it, and I think that it's, you know, it's a very complicated thing to explain, but you are a baseball lover. You understand how this thing works. It's very different with Nomar because he was on the tail end, right, and not producing, whereas Devers, I think, for the last, you know, whatever, 5-6 years of his contract, has a real chance to be one of the great power sluggers in the game. And I think for 5 years, they'll get a lot of production from him in San Francisco, whereas, you know, Nomar was sort of nearing the end of his his peak years. But there is a parallel in that. I think the Red Sox had to do this because they've got this impressionable, really fun, young group of talented players. And you can't have your highest paid player refusing to do things that are fundamentally important to the organization. You know, like, it's one thing to feel a little hurt when Alex Bregman and how dare they take my position away from me. Okay, we get it. Athletes have egos. You can mope for a little while, but then move on, right? And They lose their first baseman, Tristan Tostes. He blows out his knee. Bregman goes down for 2 months, and still Devers refuses, even with the owner flying to Kansas City, almost begging him to do what's right by the team and be a good teammate and try to put a glove on and play a position again. Once he said no to the owner, it was a fait accompli that he was out of here. And look, I was in AAA with Rafi Devers. I translated Spanish to English his first press conference to the mass of writers in Boston that were so eager to welcome him. And I have had so much joy calling his home runs. And he was a wonderful hitter and player for the Red Sox. But it was time. They had to make that move. Once he started bailing on the most fundamental obligations of being a good player and teammate, they had to set the tone. I'm thrilled that they did. I wish him well. There's no ill will. I think people misinterpret that, Matt. Like, nobody wants him to suffer or struggle in San Francisco, but everybody has turned the page, and this is not Mookie Betts. It's not Xander Bogaerts. It's not the same thing. This guy took a stand and said, I'm not going to be a good teammate, and the Red Sox said, okay, good luck in your next adventure. We'll see you down the road. And yep. I think this team has galvanized around that. I thought it was a brilliant move.
Will, do you see Theo Epstein? Does he hang around? Does he is he ever out there on the field watching BP? What's his presence level like?
He's not very present at all. And I think that's a good thing. Like, you know, you hear all these stories from Craig and others where he will help with a big contract negotiation. Like, I think he was active in figuring out how to get Crochet done. I know that he was really instrumental in figuring out a creative way to get Alex Bregman in a Red Sox uniform because, you know, he's been in the fires. He knows these agents. He knows how to sort of, you know, massage a big-time star player to figure out the dollars and the outs and the options and all that stuff. But Theo is doing the right thing. Remember, you know this, Cubs fans know this, Theo brought Breslow here to Chicago.
Yep.
And so there's a certain respect between those two where it's not father and son because Craig is his own man and he's doing a great job adding guys and working this organization. But I think Theo is right down the hall. And if Breslow has a big decision to make, he's probably picking up the phone, bouncing ideas off the wall. But Theo is not present. He's not, you know, he's not forward-facing on any level, and I think that's a really good thing.
Will Fleming, thanks for squeezing us in, man. Have a great call, and I hope you can withstand the personality of Mike Monaco, the maniacal personality.
What a jerk he is, huh? It's great to be here. Always great to catch up with you, and we're going to have some fun on air. Thanks, Matt.
All right, buddy. We'll see you. Thanks. That's Will Fleming, Red Sox radio voice, working with Mike Monaco these days. And Mike lived here in Chicago for 5 years or so and is now doing great work with the Red Sox crew. It is Hit and Run. It is me, Matt Spiegel, here with you. We are just getting ready to get up out of here. The Red Sox and the Cubs will be coming your way at 1:20 pregame before that. Right now, the White Sox and the Pittsburgh Pirates are warming up. It's going to be Aaron Civale against Andrew Haney. In that one, Civale 1-6 in his White Sox career here so far with a 5.30 ERA. I bet he remains after the deadline, but Adrian Hauser, I suspect, will go somewhere and maybe very, very soon. He's been really good. Yesterday, not so much, didn't get through five yesterday, but kept the damage to a minimum, and the White Sox came back with that 8 spot yesterday in the late innings and took off and took care of it. Red Sox Cubs, it's Cade Horton against the great Garrett Crochet. Was talking to Giolito in the Red Sox clubhouse yesterday and just talking briefly about that team that made the playoffs in the pandemic year with Ricky Renteria. It's Giolito who starts game one against Oakland and then out of the bullpen after Dunning, Dane Dunning had a short stint. They brought in Crochet right out of the pen. But that team had Crochet, Rodon, and Cease to go along with Giolito. And it's crazy to think about all those big-time arms together and what that White Sox thing possibly was going to become and what it did not become. And here is Garrett Crochet. It's got to kill White Sox fans. It kills me as a Chicago baseball guy to see Crochet turn into the dominant front of the rotation, well-paid, well-deserved, leadership-laden ace of that Red Sox rotation. And Giolito was that guy when Crochet came up, but it is now Crochet's role there in Boston. The White Sox nailed that draft pick. Absolutely nailed it. And then had to deal it away. But they've got three of those pieces from the trade up at the big league club right now. Chase Meidroth, Wickelman Gonzalez, who finished the game in Pittsburgh yesterday, and Kyle Teal. And Braden Montgomery, still down on the farm, is probably the best of all four of them. Thanks so much to our guests on the show today. Brian Smith from Bleacher Nation, James Fox from Future Sox, Drew Pomerantz from the Chicago Cubs, and Will Fleming, the radio voice of the Boston Red Sox, and Lucas Giolito. Packed show. Tyler Farengel, Baby T, great job, buddy. Thank you so much for producing. Thank you to you, dear listeners. Back tomorrow on Spiegel and Holmes at 2 o'clock. Cubs baseball is next on 670 The Score.